Delia Ephron has written 14 books, 7 screenplays, 2 plays, and lots of articles. I'm tired just saying that. Her writing takes on many forms for many audiences, from children through adults. Her latest work is Syracusa, a novel set on the Italian island of that title. Delia Ephron will be talking about the book tonight at an event sponsored by Rainy Day Books at Unity Temple on the Plaza. But right now, she joined us in the KCUR studios. Delia, welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Everyone knows your sister Nora, of course, but writing seems to be a family business. Tell me about all the writers in your world.
Well, I was raised, my parents were screenwriters, so writing was a thing. And at the dinner table, every time I said something funny, my dad shouted, "That's a great line, write it down." So I was trained very early to notice my language, and also I learned very early that if you couldn't tell a good story, you were just practically like excommunicated from the table. You were like an axe murderer if you were boring. So my family really worshipped the words, and I grew up in that environment, and all four of us sisters were writers.
You waited till 30 to really write professionally. Why is that? Why'd you wait?
Oh, my gosh. Well, my parents being screenwriters and my sister Nora knowing she wanted to be a writer in the womb, I think that I just put it off. And you know the thing about your 20s, they just kind of go wandering by and you don't really realize this is your life. You know, you better do something. And so I left a job. Well, I had this awful boss, okay? And one day—
Wait a minute, tell me about him. What was he so awful?
He was mean. He was mean. And you know the thing about a mean boss is eventually they're mean to everyone, right? So one day he says, he's really mean to me, and I just quit. I said, I quit. I walk out the door, and he shouts, "You're flat-chested." I swear. So I cannot believe this. I've spent my entire life thinking of my fabulous comebacks to that ridiculous line. But one of my favorite things that's ever been said to me because I love to tell that story.
So wait a minute. So run through a couple of the comebacks right now because I'm
No, not on NPR. No, they're all pretty bad. Okay, but the thing is, I'm unemployed and flat-chested, right? What am I going to do? So I go into the crocheting business, all right? In fact, my first book is The Adventurous Crocheter. I'm sure you did not know that little fact.
I did not know that.
No, but anyway, I was writing it. I was crocheting my brains out, selling purses and belts to New York department stores when I was at a party in New York, and there was an editor there from Simon & Schuster, and I walked up to him, and I said in the most pathetic way, "I know you'd never be interested in this, but would you like a book about crocheting?" And he said yes. I've never been so stunned in my life. So that was my first book. And
so before you go on, let me just ask here, what I'm hearing is that writing about crocheting far more profitable than actually crocheting?
No question about it. No, you're absolutely right. And the thing is, I'm writing all these directions, right? And I suddenly think, I really want to be a writer. You know, when you say the dream out loud, it gives it a kind of power. And so I said to my husband, my first husband, that's an important part of the story. I said,
"It always is."
I think I want to be a writer. And he said, "I don't want you to be a writer." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Suppose you become famous. I don't want you to become famous." And I said, "I promise I won't be famous." Okay. So obviously I had to leave him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if someone wants to squash your dreams with their big fat foot, you have to get out of there.
Damn right.
Get out as soon as possible. Right. So I took all my money, and it was about 2 years later, and I was down to like $200, $300 actually, which is a lot more. I would have had 5 except I fell in love with an orange coat. But anyway, and I'm eating chocolate pudding one night. And I'm eating it my way. This is the way you cook pudding. And it has that little skin on top. Mm-hmm. And I made a little hole in the top. And I was scooping the pudding out underneath. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm eating like a child. And I wrote directions, right? I knew how to do that. I wrote directions for how children eat food. And I sold it to the New York Times. It was called How to Eat Like a Child. And it was a sensation. I mean, it was how hysterical. I was saved by chocolate pudding. I was offered a book contract the next day, The New York Times said the only thing that got more mail than this was Israel. People were writing in how they eat Oreos and all these, you know, ridiculous things. So I was launched.
Before I move on, I just want to ask, so the fact that you grew up in the family business of writing, you didn't reject that, did you? Because that's the way you grew up?
I wasn't rejecting it. I think it was just a big mountain to climb. I mean, if you have really successful parents and a really successful sister, then you sort of think, I don't know if I can take that on. And interestingly enough, my sisters, Hallie and Amy, who are both successful writers, Amy became a writer at I did it at 28 or 9, Amy at 39, Hallie at 49. So for all of us, I think it was a bigger mountain.
Yeah. And I grew up in retail and rejected that pretty early on. And at the dinner table, my father would scream, "That's a great sale item."
Did he? Really?
Yeah, but that's a different story. We're not here to talk about
that. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So I want to move on. So you're so successful in writing in so many different ways. And I'm wondering, so a story pops into your head. And then how do you decide whether it's a screenplay or a novel or something for the stage? Does it lend itself for that, or do you have to get a little deeper into the story to know where you're
going to go? No, I know right away. If I love something and I know it's big, it's a book, because you can't get fired off a book. And you can get fired, I don't know if everyone knows this, off a screenplay. They just replace you. You're like Kleenex out there. So when I was in Syracuse, which is the title of my new book, when I was there, it was this falling down place in Sicily. It's an amazing place because in 212 BC, the Romans knocked all the trees down and used the lumber for ships, and they never planted any more trees. So it's a stone paradise. It's paved with stone. And the first day I thought, oh, my God, this is so magical. And the second day I thought, if I don't get out of here fast, I'll go mad. So right away, I knew it was a place to set a story about two couples. I always wanted to write about marriage. Two couples on the isolation of vacation and one child, and they end up in this place that can turn on you.
And that's what the story came together when you were on the island? I mean, you could see it?
It was so provocative, the place. And I knew it would be almost a character in the thing because it starts out being beguiling and turns on all these characters. You know the way Venice has a quality where one minute it looks beautiful and next minute it's all foggy and weird and strange? I mean, this place, I mean, it's remarkable for that. And I'm always on the lookout. But also, I always want to write about marriage because years ago, a psychoanalyst said to me that what we think of as chemistry – is really psychology, that two people falling in love across a crowded room is just each spotting their perfect neurotic match. And I got to say that I find it chilling and probably absolutely true. Yeah. So I wanted to write about – I've always wanted to write about marriage and what a secret society I think marriage is. The first most important line I wrote when I started the book was, couples collaborate, hiding even from themselves. Who is calling the shots? And who is along for the ride.
Was that the first thing that...
The first thing that I wrote within the first couple of pages where I went, this is what this book is about.
Yeah. Can I share something with you?
Yeah.
Yeah. My Jack Gitterman was my therapist in Philadelphia, and he told me the same thing about chemistry. So clearly they must have gone to the same school.
Oh, that is amazing.
Isn't that amazing, though? That,
yes.
Right. And you never think of it in those terms, but in fact, it makes perfect sense, doesn't
it? It does. Someone told me this term I'm obsessed with called the unthought known. It's even hard to wrap your brain around the unthought known. It's what you know that you don't consciously know, and that's what's operating there.
Yeah. Delia Ephron is my guest here on Up to Date. She's going to be speaking about her new book tonight at Unity Temple. So tell me more about the story. Did you see the whole thing? Did the whole arc of the story lay out for you immediately, or do you get into the writing and then sort of see how the characters develop or which way the story is going to go?
In this case, I knew everything about who these characters were, and I knew what the complications they would begin this ill-fated Italian trip with. Lizzie and Michael, a New York couple, he is having an affair she does not know, and she's really looking forward to the trip, and he doesn't want any of the sexual expectations, the isolation. He doesn't want to be there. Finn and Taylor, who are my Portland, Maine couple, and he's a kind of earthy Irish guy, and she's a very chic woman, a little bit big fish in small pond, but pretty, you know, edgy. And Finn, okay, married to Taylor now, Lizzie married to Michael. Finn and Lizzie had an affair in the past, a summer fling, which is looking, I've never had one of those because they look pretty cool in retrospect, you know. So they have history. They have history and they have a friendship. Because this is also about friendship and betrayal in friendship and deceit in friendship. So so I'm setting these couples off, and then, and I know it's about marriage, and I know that they have secrets. And then it starts to happen as I write.
Yeah. How did you land on the couple being from Portland, Maine? I'm a little intrigued by that.
Well, you know, I've been there a lot. Mm-hmm. And I it's a very specific kind of a place. I don't know. It's on the water. And I knew exactly what his restaurant was. And it has I knew that this was a working class guy that probably hadn't gone to college. I knew he hadn't gone to college, but he was a successful businessman in running a restaurant. He knew what he was doing. So I love the contrast. You see, they know each other from the past. And the reason they're all traveling together is that by accident, they were in London the year before. And they all had a fantastic time. And so Lizzie said, you know, where should we go next year? And that's how they end up. A year later, things have changed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. What's it like to write about a writer? Do you feel more comfortable writing that?
Tricky thing with this book is that it's told from four points of view. I write in four different voices and I alternate. It's called a Rashomon. So it was very hard for me. I had to switch voices. And when I was writing Michael, you had to know, because he won the Pulitzer in his 20s and he's a playwright and novelist. You had to know when you read him that he was literary, that he was a novelist. But Finn is kind of earthy. He's a raconteur. He shoots from the hip. So I'm in a whole different brain when I write Finn. And Taylor's very meticulous, so I know where I'm coming from there. And Lizzie is she's an earthy, kind of sexy woman and doesn't realize. She thinks she knows what's happening. She always thinks she knows what's happening. And, of course, in this case, she's absolutely clueless.
Yeah. And you're also writing in a 10-year-old voice, are you not?
No, I do not write in Snow's voice. Snow, who is Finn and Taylor's daughter, she's a very interesting character. You don't know whether to love her or fear her, whether she's shy or whether she's cunning, whether she's being manipulated or whether she's manipulating. And she understands in some ways more of what's going on than they do. And they each see her through their eyes. So Snow comes to life through the eyes of these four characters.
Does she tie the whole story together, do you think?
She starts on the outskirts in Rome, and you're not thinking it's that she's going to be pivotal. And then she moves in Siracusa to the center of the story.
So Siracusa becomes, in your words, almost a character in the story. Does the story change if it's a different location, do you think?
Well, I think that there's a way that when we move from Rome to Siracusa, we know things are escalating. And Rome is a more cosmopolitan place. One does not feel trapped in Rome. But Siracusa is a place where you can easily feel trapped. So they go to this place, and it's more unfamiliar and Lizzie loves it because, you know, it's kind of beguiling, and it has these markets of – she loves food markets. And Taylor's a five-star traveler. She is not happy in this falling-down hotel. So in addition to all the personal dramas that are playing out, Siracusa exerts a power. I mean, if you see Siracusa on a sunny day and the old section is raised up 15 feet above sea level with this parade of ancient buildings, all right? And it's so stunning and glamorous, and in a way, not glamorous, but intriguing, and you want to be there. But if you see it on a dark, stormy night, it looks like Alcatraz. So you want to be there, and then you want off, and how do you get off?
How do you get off?
Yeah. It's not easy. When you're all trapped together, and stuff is spinning out of control, you feel very vulnerable. I mean, if you travel with friends ever?
Sometimes.
Yeah, well, sometimes.
It's uncomfortable for me. Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes it's completely great, and other times you think you're going to lose your mind. And these couples travel differently. One of the fun things about researching Siracusa was that I had to go back, of course, when I started the book.
Well,
I had to travel as my characters. So, you know, I like to just – my idea of vacation, you walk and eat. That's it. Walk and eat. But Taylor is cultural. So I had to go to the Greek ruins like Taylor. I had to go to the Caravaggio and the Da Vinci exhibit. And Finn, he likes to cruise bars very late at night. So I find myself at 2 in the morning in a dive bar, you know, with karaoke blaring, and I'm Finn, right? And Michael, who's up to stuff a lot and needs secret places for illicit sex. So I did not go have illicit sex, but I did look for little places where he could be. And Lizzie loves the food market. So I went as my characters, and I traveled completely differently. It was fantastic.
How's your Italian?
Oh, absolutely useless. I don't have any whatsoever. But I made friends, and people were so nice to me. I mean, I made friends with an architect there who just told me everything and vetted my book for me, and she was so wonderful. And I made friends with the police translator, Paola Sarno, and we're, you know, on email all the time. So, I mean, you go writing a book, especially this book, was a real adventure.
Yeah. And you've written, of course, this project by yourself. You've collaborated. Do you prefer one way or the other, or does it depend on the project?
Well, in this case, because it was a book, it had to just be my own. And because if I love a story, then it's a book. So it's so important to me not to get fired off something I love. But so to me, this was always a book. But also, I heard these people's voices in my head from the very beginning, and I knew they each wanted to tell their stories. So it was literary, but it's been sold to film, Siracusa.
Oh,
it has.
Congratulations.
A fantastic company has bought it. And I'm writing the screenplay now.
So you've wrapped this up, sold the movie rights. What's the next project?
Oh, well, I'm writing the screenplay, so.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
How is that? Are you finding that to be an extension of these four characters? Are you learning more about them as you write them for film?
One of the things about film is, it's visual. So you've got to think, what can be, how do I make this the most visual thing it can? And also, I have to sort of telescope it. What are the most important elements of this story? Because you can ramble around with a book, and still, I love to move plot forward very quickly, but you have much more leeway in a book than you do in a movie. I have to be ruthless.
Ruthless. Ruthless as you attack the screenplay.
Yeah.
I like that. Delia Ephron speaks tonight at Unity Temple on the Plaza at 7 p.m. For tickets and more information, go to rainydaybooks.com. Delia, it was a super joy having you in. Welcome to Kansas City.
Thank you very much.